This is an interview on 1st of December 1966 with Mr. What are your initials?
W.N.
Bostock. Bostock. Rather unfortunately for us, there's far more to it than that.
Yes.
Well, now, first of all, I think we'll get you from the beginning of your career. Am I right in thinking that you may have been in the Permanent Army at Esquimalt when Perks was here, or not?
No, Perks had left here and gone to Ottawa, I think, when I came here as works officer. He was, as far as I know, director of training.
Oh, I see. Well, would you have met him at any time, shall we say, before the war broke out?
Only very slightly. He was one of the senior officers I'd actually really never did meet. When I was in one place, he was in the other.
Oh, I see.
And I don't remember meeting him at all.
When did you go on his staff then? When did
well,
you
let's see. Just before Christmas 40, I think, I was in what was called base units then, and I was appointed from A&Q base units to be A&Q 1st Division. 1st Division was at Knapp Castle.
Yeah.
And I think it was just before Christmas or just after Christmas.
That's right, that's
it. Might have been the first week in June, January. And Vokes was G1 and I was A&Q.
Where had you come from when you...
What was called base units. I went over to the 2nd Division, and I went to... was promoted and went to base units, and then I was promoted out of base units and went to the 1st Division.
And you'd go with what rank?
Lieutenant Colonel.
Lieutenant Colonel at that time. And he was at... That was K-N-E-P-P Castle, isn't that the one?
Is that yes, that's it.
Yeah. Where was that? Now, that, I know that's down in Rockville.
That's near West Grinston.
West Grinston, no, East Grinston.
Yeah, so West Grinston, it was just a little place.
Uh-huh.
It was just a sort of whistle stop on whatever the railway was.
Uh-huh.
And we were in Knapp Castle, which was one big estate, and there was another big estate, West Grinston Park, which where we had the cavalry regiment.
Oh, I see. In a situation like that, where you go to headquarters of a division, are you asked for, or are you appointed, or
we had, McNaughton set up a thing called the selection board, and they how does it work? Each division or equivalent formation sent in the names of people they thought were suitable for promotion to other jobs,
mm-hmm.
and the selection board met and decided who was due to go up to the next job.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the divisional commander was allowed to say no.
Oh, I see.
He could get out in advance that he'd like to have so-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't mean he'd get him.
I see.
And if he got somebody he didn't like, it was rather awkward.
Yeah. I can so,
at least he didn't send me away when I arrived.
Well, I understand, from speaking to various people, that by heavens, he had quite a temper.
Oh, yes.
And he could really tear a strip off a person.
He certainly could.
I find it difficult to imagine that now, somehow or other.
And he had very much a mind of his own, there's no doubt about that.
Mm-hmm. Can you remember any any examples of this?
Not offhand, actually, but...
You'd call him, in general, fairly peppery.
Yes. Not peppery so much, because there was always sound reason for his annoyance at people. I mean,
uh-huh.
he didn't... he had certain idiosyncrasies, I know. He used to have to be prepared for this and prepared for that. But,
what sort of things?
Well, I was just saying, it's awfully hard to remember it all at once.
Mm-hmm. I remember, evidently he was quite keen on physical training, sports.
Yes.
That sort of thing.
And at that time he was hunting with the local hounds.
Oh, yes.
We used to go out from the... I think he rode. I know he encouraged his ADC to ride. I think the rest of us felt we were too busy to join in these childish sports.
Yes, he rode.
Yes.
From all I gather. His ADC at this time would be Danby, would it not?
No, it was another little chap. Danby was part of the town. Nice boy in the Edmontons.
I think I would probably
start
have
an S.
I probably have a record of it down in the Division of War area somewhere, I think. How did he strike you? I mean, there you were, a lieutenant colonel going to the staff of a, certainly, I would imagine, a well-known chap. And of course, I grant you, this is 20, 25 years ago, but do you remember anything of your first impression of him?
Oh, very much so. I felt like a new boy at school, you know. I'd been in the 2nd Division, and the 2nd Division felt that the 1st Division knew it all, and we were the... So we were very hostile, you might say, to the 1st Division. Then suddenly I was transplanted. I was in base units for 2 months, I think, and then I went up to... I had been DAAG in the 2nd Division from its formation.
Uh-huh.
And then I went to base units as made left-hand colonel, and then the first thing I knew, I was back in the 1st Division as a left-hand colonel, and I felt just like a completely out of water, you know, for the first week or two, and then I began to feel at home.
Now stop this for a minute. Good enough.
Well, Larry, I'll just leave this and you can reach.
Right.
I was just thinking, I used to have... diaries of all that time. I regularly kept a diary, but I burnt them all and burnt the
house. Oh! Oh!
That's the way
God.
It goes, isn't it? Not that I put down anything except what I did that day or
yes,
what
you
did, but that would remind one of the events that they unfortunate.
Yeah.
But I found it terribly hard to think back. I was just talking to Walls today, who was overseas at the same time. I said, do you. What can you remember? And he said, I can remember faces, but I can't put names to them. Mm. And you can remember events, but you can't remember where they actually were.
I know.
It's not as easy. I don't think you're going to get much out of this tape.
Well, one never knows. Sometimes, you know, one can speak for an hour and only get 10 minutes.
Yes.
But 10 minutes is 10 minutes. Of course, I'm interested in him primarily. And naturally, I suppose, and anything you can remember about him or any of his...
Well, he certainly inspired. The one thing he had, because he still has, that certain other senior officers didn't have, was the ability to inspire people to do whatever he wanted them to do. Well, I suppose the most outstanding event I can remember was that we were going to have an exercise organized by Corps Headquarters, in which the 1st Division was supposed to be defending and being driven back by the Germans. The invasion started and we were defending and the Germans were driving us back. And so I organized a meeting of all the officers in some cinema in Brighton, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked for 2.5 hours without a note. And you couldn't have heard a pin drop anywhere. And he explains his theory that you were right, you were winning the war. Everything went right. The men came first. He said, I was given the VC. In the first war, I got the VC. I can't remember his words, but the thing was, he didn't get the VC for that day. It was because he looked after his troops, and the troops had been with him, and it was a reward for the troops for the 2 terrible weeks they'd had leading up to that.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that, and there wasn't a sound, and everybody came out. We went from that then we went into this exercise, and I must say we did it all right, but everybody went in as though they were going over the top.
Exactly.
It absolutely inspired them. Beaver, they called that.
Oh, yes. Well, there's Beaver 1, Beaver 2, Beaver 3, and Beaver 4. And then there's Fox and Dog and heaven knows what else. During 1941 especially, it was just one exercise after another.
So I know this one, and he turned the whole... he didn't change anything on paper, but he changed the spirit of the exercise, that we were driving the Germans back into the sea instead of being... And just changed the whole attitude of the whole thing. And he had that, and if he'd only, and the same, of course, out here at Illusions, he inspired everybody that it was a major operation of the war. In fact, he got rather unpopular with Stuart because he made us all think it was much more important to be on the Pacific coast than one overseas. But wherever he went, that was it.
Mm-hmm.
That was the thing that was most important. And that is what you need, somebody who will make you realize that you're the most important part of the war and you've got to win it, and everything will come right, you hope.
Someone told me that he built up, or that there was, with him and among his staff at divisional headquarters, and indeed anywhere he was, very much of an in-group or family feeling, and that it was hard for an outsider to get into that.
Oh, I think
that
that's
he had his small...
That was the feeling I got when I joined, that here was I, a stranger, and these people, they were just a close-knit family.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons that he became unpopular with the other senior officers, because the 1st Division was always right, and the 1st Division never admitted that anybody else could do anything. Which is very good for the 1st Division, but it doesn't help the army as a whole. Mm.
Mm. Another thing that surprises me, I suppose it shouldn't, is the number of officers on 2nd Brigade staff and 1st Div staff who later zoomed up to greater heights and glory.
Because that was partly because it was all they were the first ones over there and got the first experience, and the theory was you had to have experience before you could go up.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, he did, I think, always anybody who stayed with him was usually good for something better.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was a hard, you had to do it right.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say it's particularly hard, but he demanded efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he was completely human.
How did he get along with Norton?
I would say very well. I think he had a good admiration for Norton.
Mm-hmm.
He'd served under... Norton had the division, he had the brigade, and he took over the division.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think... I think they both understood each other very well.
Mm-hmm.
The passive personalities were with Clary. Or the differences of... complete differences of style, I would say.
In what sense?
Well, the simplest way is he went to a conference at Corps headquarters or in the Army, and Clara would read his speeches like a very dull schoolmaster.
Oh, God.
Oh, it was terrible.
Read them, actually.
Actually read them. And, of course, Perks never appeared to have a note or make any preparation for them at all. He just went in and it came out.
Yeah.
Good.
Are there any other things you can think of insofar as this difference is concerned? For example, I heard, I forget who from, it may have been Harkness when I was interviewing him last June, or maybe been General Kennedy, somewhere or other, as
someone who knew him on staff at about the same time you were there, mentioned that he had been promised a corps of command, and that Krierer, when Krierer got it, that he was very disappointed, and that this may have resulted in some.
Well, because I think he was. I don't know whether he was ever promised, but in peacetime, the three bright boys in the Canadian Army under McNaughton were Burks, Krierer, and Sansom.
Mm-hmm.
And they all went over the 1st Division. No, Krierer stayed behind and was on the staff in Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
Burks and Sansom went over with the 1st Division.
Mm-hmm.
Sansom was a very good soldier, but he was not physically fit. He was a great, big, heavy type. Anyway, he went back and commanded the 5th Division.
That's right.
And, Burks commanded the 1st Division. Then Burks got he had that sickness for quite a while. Then he came back, which was a wonderful thing in itself, to be able to pull yourself up out of polio or whatever. And come back. And he got the 1st Division. Old Adlam, we came over to the 2nd Division. Then Price had the other brigade. He went back and came with the 3rd Division.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And then McNaughton went to Army. Now, I don't think Perks and Monty were too much of a type in many ways to ever get on.
Too much the same, you
know? Yes, in certain senses. They were both too keen on their idea was right,
mm-hmm.
and the other fellow was just a damn fool if he didn't agree with them. I went to staff college with Monty's younger brother.
Oh, yes.
And he was very like his elder brother. He would say, must. Everything he said, that's right, must be. I say so, it's right. And that was just his elder brother's attitude. I Montgomery, say so, it's right. There's no need arguing. I know it. This young fellow, he wasn't quite as dogmatic. He was younger, but he was very much the same. But I think that may be one of the factors why he didn't get the call. I mean, this is entire speculation.
Mm-hmm.
Because McNaughton, of course, didn't get on with Monty.
Yeah, I can imagine that, too.
And Krierer didn't get on any better than anyone else could, but he was a little more of a diplomat.
Yeah.
But I think it was a turning point in his career when Krierer got the call and he didn't. And I was on... I was then G1 of the division. I remember he got the message that well, I was with him when he got the message to go back to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
I was ordered to CMHQ and promoted, and before I left, he got a message that he was to come back to Canada and hand over the 1st Division to Tef, who's killed.
Killer?
No. No, RCR, wasn't he? And he came into as soon as they got Perks out of the 1st Division, Krierer put this other man in, and he was to smash the peak, the Perks peak. I was lucky I'd gone. The A&Q just happened to get somewhere. He'd just been promoted to commander battalion, that was Foster.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my replacement got away to command a battalion. Who was A&Q? Anyway, they just blew it right apart because Krierer said that Krierer apparently told him to go in and just break up the whole idea of Perks. So the division just worshipped him. And his first job was to clear out the Perks division. And he was killed on his way to Africa.
Salmon, that's right.
He and his G1 were killed in the African tanker. But that was it filled me with disgust, because I was out of it at CMHQ, but I had been his right-hand man for so long that they would have, if I'd still been there, they would have got me.
Yeah. Well, now, I had heard, no, again, the first time I had heard this was again back in Ottawa from someone back there. And they said, and this came from more than one, in fact, I've heard this from three or four places, and how true it is, I don't know. On part of it, I was able to question Perks myself. But I gather that many people think that Perks was bounced back because he refused to go along with somebody's idea of using the 1st Division on the Dieppe raid, that because he told them in advance that he wasn't going to permit it, that the raid went to the 2nd Div.
Yes, I think that's true.
And then the raid was made. The raid was unsuccessful.
Yes.
And within a remarkably short time, Perks was bounced back.
Wasn't he being bounced, though? My memory is that I was in Ottawa. I was in London. And I had lunch with Perks the day the casualties of the upgrade came out. And he said, oh, thank God we weren't involved in that. That's the way my memory has it. I may be wrong. And we always felt that it was quite all right for the 2nd Division to have it, because the 1st Division had done Spitsbergen.
Mm-hmm.
And he may have used that as his argument. When if he thought it would have helped the 1st Division, we would have had it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure he said either he said he didn't want it, or they said you can't have it because you did Spitsbergen.
No, evidently he said he didn't want it.
And he was perfectly right.
He was perfectly right. This is it.
Because I'm sure at this time we had lunch together, he said, poor old Ham Roberts, thank heavens, I'm not in his shoes.
Yeah.
Roberts had the 2nd Division.
Yeah. Well, he had, heaven knows, made a sufficient number of raids himself during the Great War,
right.
And he had a pretty good idea of what a raid could and could not accomplish. And also, in the 1920s, as a professional soldier, he began to read a great deal of military history, and he became quite interested in the Gallipoli affair.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Gallipoli, as you know, this was another failure.
Yes.
And through his own experience in the Great War, plus his own reasoning, I gather from him that at various conferences where this was, when it was first talked about, he let them know right off the bat that he wasn't interested. And
well, he may quite possibly.
I would gather, again, and this again is speculation, that when the raid was made, and incidentally during the time that the raid was made, he went up to Scotland. He was sent away for about a week, and he just got back in time from whatever course or wherever he was to see the casualties coming back and hear about it. And one might draw the conclusion that since Querer was willing to take it on and encouraged it, and since it was not a success, that perhaps Querer and perhaps others didn't want Perks around saying, sort of, I told you so.
I think there were a whole lot of things. I think that's probably one of them.
Mm-hmm.
There was this leadership matter. Querer couldn't help seeing. See, Perks had the 1st Division, Roberts had the 2nd Division, Querer came over as a headquarters officer, took over the Corps.
Yes.
Perks' division worshipped him right down to the last soldier.
Yeah.
And Roberts' liked his. And Perks would stand up to Crerar because, as I say, before the war, they were the two equals, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
One was DMT and the other was a DOC. And
mm-hmm.
One was the other thing, operations. It used to be director of operations.
Okay.
Crerar was director of operations and Perks
That's
was director
right.
of training.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
They probably had lots of arguments before. Yeah. But I know McNaughton or King, whoever arranged the senior appointments, Crerar was just that much higher, so he got the call and Perks didn't, which might have changed the history of the war. You know.
which really also, when you think of it, that Krier in the Great War had never commanded a battalion, as had Perks.
No.
He had never commanded a brigade. He had never commanded a division. Perks had all of that. Perks had up to, what, August 1942, that would give him at least 2 years of formation, an acting corps commander.
Yes. And that he wasn't anything like the diplomat that Kerr was, of course.
Yes, so I gather.
I mean, this speech and the thing of brightness, this talk he gave, although he never said it, it was actually almost inspiring rebellion against the corps, because we were doing the exercise in reverse. Uh-huh. We, instead of defending, we were attacking.
Yeah.
And nobody, he was just inspiring his troops. He wasn't inspiring revolution. It was contrary to the spirit of the exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And I always felt that that was possibly the final rift. Pushed him over the edge, but you don't know. It's awfully hard to say at this time, but there's no doubt that if the situation had been reversed, Perks would have got rid of Krier. Krier wasn't the type of general that Perks would have had under him.
Yeah.
And he had Keller, and Keller would have gone out and been a corps commander,
mm-hmm.
instead of being kicked out by Simmons. I don't know what would have happened to Simmons. Folks never would have got anywhere under Perks. They were equally well trained, but just two completely different characters.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
In fact, the man who he's out here now, somewhere, isn't he, General Mann?
Yeah.
Kerr's right-hand man, Perks, and I used to think he was crazy.
Yeah.
I think he was. His younger brother was sent home as mentally unfit. His younger brother was in the engineers with me and was not quite straight. And Church always was a bit, I was at RMC with him, he was always a bit full of harebrained ideas.
Yeah.
Well, Krier was so solemn and steady and writing it all out that he kept these queer ideas under control and he made use of the good ones.
Yeah.
But if he'd been, he never was allowed on his own. So after the war, man, he went. He like Krier went right up to. He commanded the first of recce regiment at the time. It was the second of recce regiment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's as far as he ever got, except on the staff. And I always used to think he was a bit cuckoo. He probably thought I was cuckoo. But
yeah. He was quite the horsey type, wasn't
yes.
he?
Yes. Yes. He married Miss McLaughlin. Lachlan Buicks. Oh, massive money.
Is that right? I know he has a lovely house.
And they took them over to the staff college before the war. They took their own horses from Canada back again.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. How about that? Well, now, you said that you were with Perks at the time that he received the message that he was going home. What was his reaction to that? Can you remember?
Something like, he can't do this to me, but of course there's nothing he could, I mean, he couldn't avoid it, it was done. I mean. And I think that message came through very shortly after Beaver. And that's why I always felt that the thing that forced Krier's hand was that Perks wasn't a good little boy over the exercise.
Mm-hmm.
He showed him how the exercise should be done and did it much better, but that didn't help the schoolmaster side of Krier's. One of them had to go, there's no doubt about that, and from Krier's point of view, he was in the driver's seat.
There was another thing that someone told me, and I think I'm pretty sure it was Harkness. He mentioned a meeting, something like you just mentioned. When Perks was acting corps commander, and he mentioned that there was a meeting of officers, and Perks saying during the course of the speech something to the extent that this is probably my last talk to you as acting corps commander,
the government has decided in its wisdom to replace me by a political general.
That, I think that's correct. That was when he was acting. That was just before Pierre came over.
Now, I asked that to Brooks, and he said, no, I'd never say a thing like that. But I wonder. Because...
I doubt if he actually said those words, because I don't think he'd say a political general.
Uh-huh.
But a general appointed by the politicians or something like that.
He would.
Right? I mean, after all, he was another permanent force officer.
Yeah.
There's another meeting that Clara called, and we all went to it. It seemed to me, although Perks made a point of never being late for anything, we were late. Not only were we late, but we went out early. But this was after, this was when the 1st Division was just in the case of course. there was feeling, I suppose, like that. But there was absolutely loyalty, complete loyalty, but they didn't see eye to eye.
Mm. Did you ever run into Mrs. Perks when you were over there?
Oh, yes. She was over there, and John was over there.
Mm-hmm.
They were there at Knapp Castle. They lived in the village of Storrington.
Oh, I see.
John went to school, I think.
That was close to Knapp Castle,
yes.
Was it? Oh, I see.
And then she was only reminding me the other day. She said, I took them out to lunch, and I had forgotten. But, he came back to Canada. I took them out to lunch the day they sailed from England, or flew out there, which sailed.
Do you remember any comments or any sidelights or anything of that nature when he did leave?
No, unfortunately, I'd left the division, you see.
Oh, I see.
I left the division about 2 weeks before he left.
Before. Oh, I see.
And, then, as I say, the staff that he collected was practically completely broken up. The brigade commanders weren't touched. It was just what I gathered, the division. Salmon went in with orders to... well, the theory was to brighten up the 1st Division. They were so sloppy and slack. Remember which way you looked at it.
Well, now you met him again, or you were on his staff, or you had something to do with him, if I remember correctly, here on the Pacific Coast, did you not?
Yes, you see, I went to the division in Christmas 40 as AMQ, and then Oakes went to get a brigade, and I was made G1.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember for a time I was both jobs, and I was G1, and I stayed with him for G1. Then I went to CMHQ, and they were supposed to be reorganizing the departments in CMHQ, and I was supposed to be combined training with recruits.
Mm-hmm.
But that plot fell through, so I just was on the A staff at CMHQ. He came back here, and then...
September 42.
September. Well, in April, I suppose it was, or no, in March, CMHQ got a wire to say that I had been requested to go back to be BGS Pacific Command, which meant promotion for me and coming home. So
I see.
I said sure, and but he definitely asked for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was out here from April until October, I guess, until the thing was over. Yes, well into October. Just about 6 months.
Well,
for the whole Aleutian campaign. And there again, as I say, he made us feel here that this was much more important than Europe.
Mm-hmm. It always surprises me, in a way, when I look at the map and consider the territory that he had to command. It was really almost an empire in itself, an area as big as France,
yes.
Or more.
And the communications were terrible.
That I can well imagine. When you came back, what was the situation?
The pressure was off. they'd been through this period of really fearing a Japanese invasion,
mm-hmm.
but it had cooled off a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We still had blackouts, And by the time I got back, the Aleutian expedition had been just about decided upon. As I remember, first Stuart came out, and then Murchie came out, and we decided what troops we could use, and we got right into planning the battle. Really.
Well, now this again, I gather, was Perks's idea that a Canadian contribution should be made.
Oh, very much so, yes.
Yeah.
We went down to San Francisco and we talked Colonel DeWitt, or he talked Colonel DeWitt into what a good thing to be if we came along.
Yeah.
And then we just went ahead and organized it. And then he went up, I went up the week before and came back, and he was up there for the landing.
Yes, that's right. Mm. That's right. Do you remember this bit? I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself right now. Before I go any further, how long do I have?
I should be home by five.
By five, right? Okay. We have another 10 minutes. I was able to get some documents from Ottawa which fitted in perfectly with what he said with respect to him being up there and the actual launching of the invasion. And it seems incredible to think of it. But the Canadian troops were up there in Adak, I think it was,
mm-hmm.
On board ship, armed, everything ready to make this assault landing, and the ships were just moving out of the harbor on the final phase of the assault. And at that point, and only at that point, did Perks receive permission that Canadian troops could be used in the assault.
I think that's quite like
you. Yeah. This is extraordinary.
But that's the way that they fought the war. Well, all sorts of funny things happened. Did he tell you about the explosions on the dock at Nanaimo?
No.
Well, that's the worst night I ever spent, I think.
What happened?
We got these ships, they loaded in Seattle all the ammunition, you see.
Uh-huh.
Except some little more ammunition which they were to put on at Nanaimo, and then the troops were up above and the ammunition was down below. And it was a boiling hot day in Nanaimo, and we loaded the troops, and I suppose we flew back, because about 10 o'clock at night I was phoned up by the ordnance officer to say the troops had sailed all right and everything was going fine, but the ammunition that they hadn't been able to put in the dock into the ships at Nanaimo that we left on the dock was exploding. Did I think we should call the convoy back and disembark, see what was happening? So I called a conference of myself and the Q staff and all the ordnance officers at 1 a.m. down here in the old Vancouver Hotel, and what do we do? Do we wake the general up and tell him his expedition's off?
Oh.
So finally I got on the phone. I guess I sent to the man who had seen the stuff exploding and talked to him, and he said, well, it's just possible that they left this stuff under tarpaulins in the sun on the dock, and it was spontaneous combustion caused by the heat. So then I thought I'd better phone up the general and tell him everything's all right, we're going to let them settle. But that was terrible. I mean, they were all the whole Canadian contingent to sitting on top of exploding ammunition in the channel out here. Oh, but they all went well. Then they went up and they never got any credit for what they did, those troops, I don't think. I
mean,
they landed on the beach and expected to be fired on, and it's just as bad as being fired on.
Yeah, I agree. What about the stories that one hears, and how true they are, I haven't the foggiest idea, about the difficulty of getting some of the troops on board the ships, that many people, all these conscripts, threw away their weapons and threw away their equipment and all that sort of thing.
I don't think there was much, but I suppose the battalion commanders would have, it wouldn't have got up to the staff,
mm-hmm.
I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
I do, now you mentioned, there were stories that they had to carry one or two on board.
Mm-hmm.
But it never was reported officially, as I can remember. And they behaved quite well. I was up there with this week, and they were training hard. And doing, but then, of course, the only casualties were Americans shot by Americans on the summit.
Yes, so I gather they whacked away each other.
And,
but evidently it's a cold, miserable...
Oh, it's not a miserable place. It's just like sitting on a sponge.
Is that
soaking wet. And then they have this schmuzzle with the rum. Did you hear about that?
No, that sounds interesting.
Well, we got permission to have a rum ration. Americans had no rum rations. So we got permission to have we worked out so many pots of rum for so many days. And it was a trainload of rum almost came across and loaded on the ships. So it went up there. And the, I had to unload, disembark it all, and it was on the wharf in a warehouse with a wooden deck. And after a while, I suppose Foster ordered the rum ration periodically, and so they knew where the rum was.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly all the rum had gone, and they found that people had been boring up through the deck and fighting, you
know? Oh, yeah. Oh, no.
So they ran out of rum long before they should have.
Oh, no, not for that.
And then we had another frightful excitement. They found that the invasion of the other island, Attu, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
When they were defending Attu, the American shells wouldn't go off, so we had to get them. They had in France a special fuse that went off when it touched barbed wire, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Very sensitive fuse, so they ordered a lot of these to be put on the... Anyway, they ordered a lot of these fuses, and they were sent out to the Esquimalt, and we put on the all fuse ready before they were loaded.
Mm-hmm.
Then the artillery phoned up and said they can't possibly do that. The fuse is, once you take them off to put them on the shell, they become sensitive to moisture and they got to be prevented, kept safe. So we had to, I said, what the hell are we doing now? And they said they must be covered with rubber somehow. So we went to the medicals and we ordered a shipload of 20,000 French safes.
Oh.
Sent a detachment of Canadian soldiers down to Seattle to put French safes on. That never got the newspapers.
I'll bet it did.
That was one of the funniest things that ever happened.
I'll bet it would be. Good God. What about the period after they came back?
I left before they got back.
Oh, did you?
I was sent for to be to go to First Corps as chief engineer, and they didn't come. I don't think even Foster had come back then. I think I went before Foster came. It was just about the same time.
Uh-huh. Oh,
so it was after that, and I'd go on Macklin. Macklin then took on as G1, and
he had
all the troubles with the.
The
shooting business.
That's right.
And then I went back to Ottawa. I was kicked out of... I didn't get the First Corps in time because my wife was sick and I was held up 10 days in Gander for the weather.
Mm-hmm.
So the First Corps sailed without me and I was put in Second Corps. And then because I hadn't been overseas, I was put out of Second Corps again and ended up with CMHQ at the same job as I had before.
Is that right?
And that was getting reinforcements over from Canada, so I was at the receiving end of all this other business.
Yeah.
But I really knew nothing about the details of it. Okay.
Well, you know, one of the best documents I've ever read by a person written in the Army explaining a situation was the one written by Macklin, describing the steps taken here in the spring of 1944 to raise the 13th Brigade to get that brigade over as reinforcements. And I've never read anything. It's marvelous. It's about 15 or 18 pages, but it's beautifully done.
He was a very good writer. He was very clever at that, I think. Mm-hmm. He went a bit haywire after the war, I think.
I believe
he's taken to drink, but he was very good at that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, it's a beautiful thing. It should be printed in many ways. It's tremendous.
Well, but that sort of thing you will print, won't you? Can't you get into the life, the sort of...
This document...
Problems that we...
let's say that the contents of it will be written up.
Yeah,
but the actual document is still confidential. Secret, yeah. That is, it's marked secret, but it's bound to confidential.
And I got a photostat out of it, but I used to work at the historical section, and when I worked there, all the lieutenants and captains are all now lieutenant colonels and colonels, so I'm very much the old boy, and they will give me stuff that they'd never give to anyone else. But it's still dynamite, what he has to say, and he describes step by step how hard they worked to get these zombies to go after.
And explain to them. And,
They had the priests, the ministers, the VCs like Perks and others talking to them almost in bended knees.
Yes.
Yeah. It's fantastic reading. It's fantastic reading.
So I don't know what would happen now, 20 years after. Everybody's reactions are so different now to that sort of thing. Whether you'd ever be able to get conscription to, I imagine you'd get conscription to and everybody'd go.
I think so. I think you'd get a few.
Just the same, the whole mental attitude of the country changes.
That's right. And more especially perhaps when, let's say the enemy would be communist Russia, or communist Russia, God knows, against the Roman Catholic Church.
Yes.
And I think a good many French Canadians might.
Yes.
If they were fighting for the Pope rather than fighting for Mackenzie King, there might be
that's quite a difference.
Much more enthusiastic. Well, good. Good. This all helps.
That's vaguely what you want.
This all helps, yeah.
But if you'd like, I could come tomorrow.
I wonder if you know tomorrow. Tomorrow's Friday, isn't it? And I have lectures tomorrow, darn it. Let's put it this way. How free or otherwise are you going to be tomorrow?
Well, I wanted to catch the 1 o'clock ferry.
1 o'clock. No, I think I'll have to wait until you next come down.
Well, that's fine. Right. I don't know when that'll be.
Well, do you come down maybe once or twice a year or something of that nature?
I should be down to see the cabinet sometime fairly soon. I don't know whether I'd have half an hour or so then. Mm-hmm. This time of day is best for you, I suppose.
No, normally on a Tuesday or a Thursday, this time of day is fine. But on a Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I couldn't possibly do it because I have classes in the afternoon.
Well, we have to present a brief to the cabinet on regional districts. And I know when we're presenting that, I can...